When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
ESPN 97.5, presented by Zadok Jewelers.
KFNC 97.9 HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston, a Gal Media station.
Don't sweat the technique.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Jeremy out, B-Mac in, taking us through the rest of the week as Barry filled in the middle 2 days, but we are rolling through another jam-packed show, and after getting off to a start with the Astros, kicking into some Texans gears. And one of the things that we didn't get into a lot with Cody Davis, but it's something that caught your attention as well as mine, is a guy that I'm very high on in the acquisitions that they've made in Joe Mixon has been absent. And for a long time, he was just out. We thought it was just a veteran.
Are you about 7 days now, I think, without him seeing him on the field? I know they didn't practice today, but it's been like 7-8 days now.
So he's been out, and a lot of it was us speculating that it's just a veteran getting a little extra time off, don't want to put too much on him to wear and tear him before it's necessary, those kind of things. Now it starts getting out that it's a hamstring injury.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that can throw up a bit of a red flag, and I know you've got some legit concerns.
Yeah, and maybe this is just me going through the burns and the pains of a fantasy manager who's had Christian McCaffrey and Keenan Allen, who were 1A and 1B for, you know, the captain hamstrings, or at least in the past. McCaffrey's been pretty healthy with the 49ers. But, yeah, hamstrings, as a guy who plays fantasy football, as soon as you see that in training camp, and they didn't put that news, as you mentioned, Texans didn't put that news out initially. I'm not going to go full Astros like they're telling us about discomfort when it's actually something else. But it does seem a little eye-raising that maybe they didn't tell us it was the hamstring, maybe because they know what panic that would send out through the Texan streets. But, yeah, you see guys with hamstring injuries in camp, and hamstring injuries just linger. I mean, we've seen Christian McCaffrey in 2021 miss like 8-9 weeks, same thing with Keenan Allen the next year. And not only do you have the worry about when he could get back on the field, but you've seen with guys that come back, especially if they rush a little bit, they re-injure it at a fairly significant rate. While they're compensating and trying to come back, they injure other, you know, soft tissue things around it or their foot. We see that at an alarming rate. And when they do get back, we see their production's not, you know, well, where, you know, 100%, you know, for a few weeks, even after the back. So, look, luckily it's July.
Yeah,
and there's not a game that matters until September. But this is something to at least put a pin in and notate for now that hamstring injuries aren't anything to F around with, and they are something that can linger for a long time. So,
but if you're Nick Caserio, this is where you're
concerned with Joe Mixon.
You say, for all the work that I've done, for the guys that I've brought in, the last thing I want to do is put us behind the eight ball early by doing anything to use this guy before he's 100%.
Oh, of course. No, Joe Mixon, put him in bubble wrap.
Yeah, if I don't see him the entire...
He's not playing in the Hall of Fame game. He's not playing in the next preseason week. We'll see you maybe late August.
If I don't see you at all playing in a preseason game, I don't care, Joe Mixon, because you are so important to the overall success of this offense right now. And that's why I also said... I don't think the number two running back is on the roster when camp opened for the Houston Texans. And even though they signed Cam Akers, the more that we hear from Cody Davis, the more you and I have talked about it, the more I believe they're still doing what Nick said on one of the first press conferences he had at camp. every single day. We're looking at everybody's roster. We're trying to figure out who's going to be available, who might be a cap casualty, who might be a camp casualty, who's still out there in the case of certain positions, like safety when we mentioned that. So I got to believe, especially because now there's more of a priority to getting out and figuring out who your number two back is going to be and having some depth, because you may not be able to use Mixon right away in week one. You need to make sure you're kicking every stone and trying to figure out, is there someone else out there that I can bring in? As much as you think your draft picks are going to be effective, and some of them on defense already are, I'm not looking for Jordan, the running back from Louisville. I'm not looking for him to come in right away and be the number two.
He's a six-round pick. He's a six-round pick.
I can hear Cody, you know, sing the praises of Pierce, but I know the system just doesn't seem to fit his running style to where, even if you're going to start with him and say he's going to be my number two to start the season, I better have someone ready to go in case he's not. And that means not a week away, but if you use him in a certain game and it's not working out, I need someone else I can go to in that game that's going to do what I need to do to provide balance for this offense. So I think that it's something that they've got to focus on even more so now than if the conversations you and I, Jeremy, have had of whether I've been more high on Mixon than you guys. We all said if there was going to be an injury, it could be, you know, a very serious situation for this team where they're currently constructed.
I mean, let's be honest about his situation. As far as running back age goes, he's elderly.
Yeah.
I mean, he turned 28 just a few days ago during this period where he's been missing from Texans training camp practices with the hamstring injury. And we've seen more so than any other position. You could say this about, you know, almost any athlete in sports that it's a possibility, but it seems even more consistent or happens more often at the running back position that guys don't always grade or age gradually or gracefully at the running back position. It's like, okay, one day they have it, next day they're over the hill and they're done. We kind of saw that with Ezekiel Elliott in Dallas. Like one day he was a great running back, the next day he was averaging like 3-2 a carry and he sucked. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the concern here with Joe Mixon. Not that he's necessarily washed. He didn't look like he was washed last year, although the yards per carry averages have been down for a while. But if this is a guy who's 28 now having hamstring injuries, he's not able to get reps in training camp, he's not able to get reps in the preseason, he's not getting used to his new teammates, the new plays, the new system, it's a mini red flag. I'm not full on pressing the panic bug, but it's a mini red flag that I think we have to pay attention to. And to your point, I think they have to be aggressive at going and get another running back. I'm holding out a little bit of hope that Damien Pierce, maybe the light goes off and he gets this system. Because if he does, I think we'd both agree that he has the talent to be, mm-hmm. you know, a number two running back, or maybe even your starter if the light goes off as far as him getting the system in year two under Bobby Slowick. But, you know, I'm not betting on that, and I'm also not betting on Cam Akers. So the Texans, to your point, really need to be aggressive, maybe even more aggressive for that position than any other position outside of possibly safety. To me, those are the, you know, 1A and 1B, where I feel actually better about what they have at safety as far as depth-wise, but they need to be aggressive at both positions.
Well, and that's why when you look at it, the one thing that's a positive from what they've already done is that it shows me exactly what I'm expecting them to do, which is go get someone that has experience. Cam Akers had experience with the Rams, with the Vikings. You know, he had some years.
Not to cut you off, but does the specific addition of somebody like a Cam Akers, like, because if they weren't concerned about Joe Mixon, do you think they go out and add somebody with a kind? I hate to say it, he's not a big name, but somebody with the name of Cam Akers.
But
I mean, isn't that kind of a
do.
Sign that he's going to be out for a while?
I don't think so. I thought before training camp even started that this is the kind of guy that they were looking to get. But you would think that you were looking to get a guy like that, they'd be fully healthy. So the fact that you got Akers coming off an injury, one, from a positive perspective, shows me they're willing to do what I want them to do, which is not get some non-household name that you're hoping that kind of with a new change of scenery could be something that they haven't been already with a team, but finding a guy that maybe has never been the number one guy, but has shown you from time to time with experience with teams that they have the ability to go do what you need them to do. And that if you're willing to go get a guy like Cam Akers, especially that he's not 100% yet, that tells me, hey, they're willing to take a veteran even and find a guy that's got experience to be their number two. Because I think now, to your point, even if they're already thinking that with what they did with Akers, now I think it even tells you whether Akers works out or not, and if he's a camp body or they expected something from him somewhere in the season, they're not afraid to go get another guy to be able to be the guy right away if Mixon is indeed, you know, injured.
I mean, I hope so. But, I mean, kind of I agreed with you, you know, beforehand that they need to go out and get that number two running back. But to me, if they thought Joe Mixon, oh, this is fine, he's back in a week, then they probably aren't going out and adding somebody to the caliber, we think, you know, obviously coming off injury, we'll see, but of Cam Akers. I've got a text from 3667 raising a point that I don't want to put on Joe Mixon right now because, I mean, he seems to be legitimately hurt, but it's something you have to talk about with veteran players who get the bag, especially at running back position. Ezekiel Elliott in Dallas was good up to the minute, signed the big contract. The next day, instant trash. I mean, Joe Mixon did get some more money added onto his contract. He's a little bit older. You know, he's been in the league a long time. I don't want to say that he's not going to fight as hard as he can to get back, but it is something to watch over, you know, over training camp and preseason as we get to the regular season. Is he as motivated? New team. He's got some money now, guaranteed money. I think they guaranteed $12 million for him over this year and next. We'll see how motivated he is to get back, see how that hamstring responds. But I'm a little concerned right now about him getting back on the field and being a big impact factor for the Texans.
I'm not. I think that I just feel like there's enough for hamstring, him that he still wants to prove.
I've got the burns from fantasy play. Hamstring injuries, as any fantasy player would tell you. I mean, other than a season-ending injury, like the thing I want to see the least when I see a news alert for one of my players is hamstring injuries. It's like, well, I'll see him in 6 weeks probably.
Yeah, well, I mean, at this point, 6 weeks for me, I'm still okay with that.
If he returns to be at 100%,
but I believe that he's still got a lot that he has to prove. I believe that he wants to prove it. I think that getting out of Cincinnati, he wants to establish himself. Yes, he's got the contract. Yes, they gave him some money that, you know, they didn't have to do, but maybe that's even more motivation that, hey, this is a team that has a chance to do a lot of good things, and if I'm on this team and I'm capable of doing what I think I can still do, that this team can be taken to a different level. I want to see that from him, but that's also why I still want to see them be aggressive to find another option that can give you what you need if he isn't able to do it, whether it's early on or throughout the season. I think that they have to focus on that.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that the hope, to your point, the money is a motivating factor. Again, just speculating wildly here, trying to cover all the angles. But we've seen guys, as the texter pointed out, like Zeke, years before that, Sean Alexander, the question was like, oh my God, are they going to pay him? Are they going to pay him? Are they going to pay him? Seahawks finally paid him, and then he was just never the same again. Not everyone responds the same way to finally getting some money. So we'll see how it goes for Joe Mixon. But between that and the hamstring and my own concerns even coming in, because as I've beat to death, he hasn't had a good yards per carry since 2019, I'm a bit concerned right now.
All right, so let's keep moving forward, but that's something to put on the back burner and keep in mind that that's something that you have to keep an eye on and make sure is going to be okay by the time you get close to the start of the regular season. I didn't think that they were going to go bring in any kind of veteran help at running back till maybe a week before the start of the regular season, so there is time to do that when you see how things shake out with other camps, but it's still something to be considered as a high priority, especially if it's not just Mixon and his age. If it is truly the hamstring that's going to keep him back, you've got to be prepared. You've got to have insurance. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to start getting back into some Astros talk. Let's talk about some of the odds that are in Vegas coming out for some of the key names that are on the on the trade list. And from the trade market perspective, what are the Astros' odds of landing one, if not more, of some of the names that are being kicked around? Interesting conversation that will also lead into Heidi Watney, who is going to join us at 4:30. She is going to be on the telecast for Apple TV on Friday night of the first game of the Dodgers-Astros series. She's great to talk to. She normally has some insight for us, and we'll catch up to her at 4:30. All that and a whole lot more. Stay right where you are. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM. Before we go to the break, a word from my good friend Doc Linville. Doc Linville, best in the business at two of the best procedures that I know of when it comes to your own hair, and that is the PRP treatments and the Neograft procedure. PRP comes first. If it doesn't work or he doesn't think it's going to be effective, he'll go to the Neograft procedure, which I had. But either way, they're game changers. I always use the lawn as kind of the way I compare things so that you can make more sense of it. If your lawn has a lot of, it still has grass on it, but it's thin spots, it doesn't look the same with the kind of lush, thick grass that you're used to. PRP treatment is like the fertilizer you put on your lawn. PRP, as you've heard athletes use it, can do a lot of things to kind of resurrect your joints, your elbows, your knees, your rotator cuff. But PRP also works with your hair, and it provides you with stronger, longer, better hair follicles because of the fact it's like fertilizing your lawn. If you do need the Neograft procedure like I did, I found out by doing a consultation with Doc and his staff that basically you're never going to lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head. He's able to take some of that hair, repurpose it where you need it. Maybe it's your hairline like I had in front, or maybe it's the bald spot up on top and back. But either way, that hair is visible almost instantly. When you get out of the procedure, you look in the mirror, you can see the follicles are there. And he told me 95 to 99% of those follicles ain't going anywhere. They're going to be there with you for the rest of your life. And in 6 to 9 months, when they get stronger and longer and really kind of set themselves, you are going to see unbelievable results. I saw them. You can too. And because you listen to us and want to talk to him, you get a consultation with Doc and his staff for free. It normally costs $150 just by going to 975hair.com. Go to 975hair.com, set up that appointment. Go in, ask questions, get answers. Let them explain PRP and the NeoGraft and see if it might be right for you. It was right for me. It was right for John Granato. You can be the next in line to reap the benefits of Doc Linville and these great procedures. Check them out today. Go to 975hair.com.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Hey, back on the Bees, almost to the midway point in the show. Heidi Watney is scheduled to join us to start the second half of the program, so you'll want to hear that. She's on the call for Apple TV for the Dodgers and the Astros, kicking it off tomorrow night from the Juice Box as the Astros have the day off. Also want to remind you that Rock the Mic has returned. It's time to find the newest Houston sports podcaster. The winner of Rock the Mic is going to get a podcast hosted on our ESPN Houston YouTube channel. Whether you already have a podcast or you've always wanted to start one, now's your chance to get in the running. But you got to enter to win. You can enter by yourself or you can enter with a partner. 3 to 5 minute video that you need to submit to us to see your best Houston sports takes and see if you've got what it takes to rock the mic. You can enter that by sending the video to rockthemic975@gmail.com. The winner's going to be announced at our live finale on August 23rd at Carbach Brewery. You can't win it if you don't get in it, so get your entries in now. rockthemic975@gmail.com. I think last day for entries is August 2nd.
I believe that's correct, yes.
All right, so BMAC, we've talked previously about the fact that we both feel like the Astros have got to do something between now and the deadline.
Desperate for starting pitching.
I think we both have prioritized starting pitching one, but I'm not out of the realm of possibilities to say that they could add either a bat or a relief pitcher as
now
well.
Now you're starting to sound like Dana Brown.
I'm not saying
we'd like to add.
I'm
all
not
of
saying
it
it's going to be the marquee names in those positions because I don't think they have the assets. But I'm encouraged and hopeful that they can at least look to address those as well if there's
sure.
the right opportunity. But you've discovered with the Vegas odds, there's some names associated
there's,
with
there's
some
one name I want to start with now because we'll have to save time to get to Heidi Watney on the other side of the break. She'll be on the call for Astros Dodgers tomorrow for Apple TV. We don't want to be late for that. But the name that stood out to me, and this is the team or this is the player that Vegas. This is from Bet Online, Jimmy Shapiro. The player the Astros have the best odds on right now as far as being in contention to get them at the trade deadline. It's the name we've mentioned several times, but Eric Fetty, the starting pitcher from the White Sox, who resurrected his career, went overseas. I can't remember if it was Korea or Japan, but really resurrected his career, come back, was pitching for the White Sox, has a sub-3 ERA, his whip's like 1-1, has been great. And on top of that, I don't think he's going to command a ton because he's 31, so he's a little bit older. But you also, if you do get him, he's under team control for next year for only $7.5 million. So extreme, he's you got team control. He doesn't cost you hardly anything. I mean, $7.5 million for a quality starting pitcher is pennies. And he's been great this year. And he's not going to be someone because, you know, he's Eric Fetty, because he's not, you know, a bigger name like his teammate Garrett Crochet, because he's in his 30s. I don't think he's going to cost you the same sort of prospect package. So to me, I mean, I still like Tyler Anderson a lot, but I think he's going to cost more. Eric Fetty, if the White Sox are willing to deal, I say, you know, get that deal done. I think this is a home run.
Yeah, this is one to keep an eye on because I think that all the buttons that need to be pushed line up for you to be able to make this deal. The big thing that you have to take into consideration is that competition and multiple teams in the market for his services are going to take even a guy like him. And I think it was South Korea. I saw the story the other night. He was pitching.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
he was pitching against the Rangers, and I was actually watching the Rangers telecast, and they were talking about it and saying, hey, guy didn't even want to leave the country, wasn't sure that it was right for him, went and resurrected his career, and now has taken it to another level coming back to the major leagues. to where, because of that, coupled with what you said about the team control, this is a guy that looks like he could step in, be exactly what you need, whether it's a bridge or a guy that ends up continuing to pitch like he's pitched this year, to be kind of an upper-ended starting pitcher to kind of complement what you have. This is the move that they need to make and focus on for the first kind of move that Dana has to make. You could trade, you know, a player or a piece to get a relief pitcher. There are a lot of those out there. I think it's far-fetched to think that you're going to find a bat that's going to help you this year. But this is the kind of guy that you need to zero in on and go, hey, before the market really gets frantic and hectic as we get close to the deadline on Monday, you should be trying to pull every punch to try and get this deal done before we get to Sunday. Because if you can make the first move in the market, that'll shift everything, and you're not trying to get the big names that are at the very, very tippy top. This is the kind of move that I think Dana should be trying to make now.
I mean, I hope so. Obviously, it takes two to tango, and the White Sox might want to hold out to the last day to see if they can create a bidding war. But what I do think plays in your favor as to that not happening is the bidding war is going to be for the other guys on the team. It's going to be for Luis Robert. It's going to be for Garrett Crochet. They might be willing to go ahead and get the Eric Fetty deal out of the way. That way, they can focus on negotiations for the other two guys that are going to bring them, a lot more back in return than Eric Fetty will.
Crochet's going to bring a boatload.
That's their focus. That's what's going to help them reset and rebuild. I mean, Eric Fetty's going to get them something, obviously. It's not like the Astros would get him for free. But I could see them going ahead and trying to make an Eric Fetty move maybe this weekend or early next week on Monday or Tuesday. Tuesday's the deadline. But let's say this weekend. And then that way freeing themselves up to deal with the bidding war for Luis Robert and Garrett
Crochet. The three guys that I zeroed in on that I think that they should be kind of getting more serious about, Flaherty and Fetty. And then Anderson. Those three guys, if you can come away with one of them, I think all three are interchangeable enough that you don't have to give up the farm per se. And I think that they'll do exactly what you need them to do. So that's something to definitely keep an eye on. We'll continue that conversation after we get done with Heidi Watney. She's supposed to join us next. She's going to be doing the game on Friday night here in Houston with the Dodgers coming to town. So that'll be a good conversation to have. But stick with us. Second half of the show right around the corner. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Back on the Bees, joining us live in the Hive, Heidi Watney. She has joined us before. She's doing sideline for the Friday night telecast on Apple TV between the Dodgers and your Houston Astros, along with Wayne Randazzo and the D-Train, Dontrell Willis. Heidi, thanks again for joining us, spending some time with us. Hopefully no traffic like New York. Hopefully you're safe and sound and out of the rain. Heidi, are you there? Evidently, we've got some technical
the
issues
rain
with Heidi.
More difficult
maybe
than
the
thought.
Rain is getting to her. I don't know, because remember
can we blame Centerpoint for Heidi maybe. Not being able to hear us?
Remember last time she was driving to the hotel.
She was in a taxi
in
yeah.
traffic in New York.
I think she did the interview from the taxi.
She did. There was lots of horns, yeah, and distractions, and all kinds of
probably.
Stuff. Austin, are we having trouble getting Heidi on?
Yeah, go ahead and put her on hold, Austin, see if you can get her back on. We can fill some time before she comes back. So, I mean, you mentioned, Joel, during the last segment about the three names that you'd be willing to make a trade for mm-hmm. with Tyler Anderson, Eric Fetty, and
Flaherty.
Jack Flaherty from the Tigers. I mean, I think you said to you they're interchangeable. I mean, if you had to pick one, though, that this is the guy I'm willing to – I don't know if you want to say market price, but this is the guy I'm willing to pay the going rate for to make sure he's here in Houston and the Astros get the help that they need for their starting pitching. Which of those three would you prefer?
Well, I think to be different from you, but also because of the fact that I don't think he's going to cost as much either, because I believe he's on a one-year deal. But Flaherty's a guy that I've been hot after for quite a while.
Yeah, you've
and
been
I think,
high on him.
You know, he pitched well the other night. He's a guy that has veteran experience. He's a guy that I'd really like to see in an Astros uniform.
Yeah, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. I think I mean, I would if that's the move. I definitely wouldn't mind it. I think I would still prefer Tyler Anderson and Eric Fetty. I know what I'm about to say would almost seem like a contradiction compared to Eric Fetty. But Flaherty's been a little up and down. Obviously, he was very good in St. Louis for a little while, but had some injury concerns. Was a little up and down. So it sounds like we have Heidi Whitney back. Heidi Whitney from Apple TV on the call for tomorrow night's Astros-Dodgers game. Are you with us, Heidi?
I am here.
There we go. We can hear you loud and clear.
I started out by saying, I don't know if you could hear me or not, but I hope that you are safe and sound, and unlike the last time that we got you on, that the New York traffic and everything was hellacious. We want to make sure that you're in a good spot when we get into some of this conversation.
The New York traffic was awful. No, I made it to the hotel, although the pouring rain did take a little bit longer, so I'm standing in the lobby of my hotel right now so I can chat with you guys before I check in.
Well, we appreciate that. Tell everybody that's passing by that they should listen to ESPN 97.5 on a daily basis.
Will do.
Big series for you guys and for, obviously, Astros fans and Dodger fans. But we know there's a rivalry there. But these are two teams that a lot of teams are watching. Dodgers bringing in Ohtani, doing all that they did. And with free agency around the corner, they're all in looking for the same thing the Astros are in starting pitching. But we want to see the matchups, and it's kind of a barometer for how the two teams will match up for postseasons as well. Your early thoughts on a big game that you guys have here on Friday night?
Oh, it's going to be a great game here. I mean, you've got the Dodgers who have just been kind of cruising in the NL West all year, but they've come out of the All-Star break pretty hot. They went into the All-Star break limping. They've gotten a couple key guys back, and Clayton Kershaw, who's pitching right now against the Giants, and Tyler Glasnow, who came back on Wednesday night. This Dodgers team, they're great. They're who you need to measure up against if you want to go on a deep run in the postseason for the Astros. And the Astros, we've talked about, they've just been one of the hottest teams in baseball since right around Mother's Day. They have one of the best records in the game. Their starting pitching has really turned it up. As we near this trade deadline, which is Tuesday, we'll see if they make any moves. I have a feeling they're going to be pretty active, but you can't look past this roster and what they've done over the course of the last 2 months of the season.
Heidi Whitney joining us from Apple TV. You can find her on Twitter at Heidi Whitney. Heidi, it feels like in some ways the Dodgers and the Astros, although their seasons have obviously gone differently, are in kind of similar spots with a lot of injuries. Obviously, the Dodgers lost Mookie Betts, Dustin May. The Astros have been ridiculously hurt with their starting pitchers. But I'm curious with the vibes maybe you get from the two teams as they approach the deadline and making their own moves, trying to get healthier, and what they look to do and what type of team they look to field after the deadline on Tuesday.
Yeah, I think both teams have a lot of talent, and I think that the front offices believe in the talent they have. Every team is looking for starting pitching depth, but these two teams in particular have really been hurt in starting pitching department this year, so if someone can bring in that, it's a weird market for trade deadline this year because there's a lot of teams that are still in it, on the cusp of in it. So are there going to be a lot of moves? We'll see. It'll be interesting. And then you know the Astros first base has been a little bit of an offensive hole for the team this year. Although Singleton has been better since Abreu was sent out, but. And for the Dodgers, I mean, the top of their lineup is one of the best lineups, the best lineup in all of baseball, especially once Mookie comes back, which is looking sometime in August, probably like mid-August for him. But that bottom half of the order has been a black hole. Kike Hernandez was good for them today in this game out there against the Giants that I was listening to in the car just now. But, you know, both teams have kind of an offensive need, but not that pressing. I think starting pitching is going to be the bigger focus.
Well, and it's interesting, Heidi, because of the fact from an Astros perspective that they don't know what's going to happen with Bregman after this season. You mentioned the fact that they've been less than at first base, whether it was Abreu's failed signing and that whole debacle, or the fact that John Singleton has been for the majority of the season. But as much as they're focused on starting pitching, we've heard Paredes' name and the Rays might be sellers as a guy that not only fills a need for this year, but then can actually transition to filling in for Bregman next year if necessary. But I'm curious because we know the Dodgers are loaded with their farm system. We know the Yankees always find prospects. We know that the cupboard's not as full with the Astros. I'm curious how many moves you think the team is capable of making because they have a couple of pretty easily to identify needs.
Yeah, well, their farm system ranks bottom towards the bottom, like 27th in baseball. So it's not ideal, but you just have to have piece, right? Or a couple of pieces, or come together on a trade. I don't know what the Rays want for Brady, but there's a couple other options out there that they could look at for first base. You know, Josh Bell, some toss around, maybe Mark Canna. Pete Alonso was mentioned a while ago, but with the Mets and how they've been playing, really that last series with the Astros, and that's just so much fun. But Paredes looks like it would be a good fit. I like how you said potentially with Bregman. I thought you were ready to just write him off there. Gosh, give the guy a chance to come back.
Well, his price tag's been high. The performance started out low, and as much as everybody wants to see him stay, I think that it's his demands might be more than they're willing to meet. You know their track record. Yeah. They don't like to sign long-term big-time deals.
Yeah, I get it. And they've really staked this franchise on Jose Altuve, a great, great guy to stake the franchise on. But you hear a lot about Bregman being a leader in that clubhouse, though. And that's not something that you can really put a finger on. And Altuve, for as great of a player as he is, he's not necessarily the vocal guy in the clubhouse. So you need that leadership somewhere. I mean, you let Malvi leave. Michael Brantley's gone. And you're going to need that somewhere. And I've been hearing a lot about Bregman's leadership in the clubhouse with a younger group of core guys, especially on the pitching side of things. But that's not what you're asking me about. You're asking me if the cupboards have enough in there to make a trade. And look, where there's a will, there's a way. They can always figure something out. I wouldn't be surprised if they try to write up the season with John Singleton. He picked up a little bit lately, but, you know, Brady's, like you said, he's under control for next year, too, so that would be a good fit there in Houston. You're always looking to improve your club. That's the best trades that are made, or trades that could improve your club for this season, but beyond. And Tampa is not there. There's not very many seasons where Tampa Bay Rays aren't in it heading to the postseason and looking to improve themselves. They're probably going to want a pitcher, and if you don't have to miss twice when you trade a pitcher to Tampa Bay because they turn into a Cy Young winner.
Heidi Whiting from Apple TV joining us right now. You can watch her in the Astros-Dodgers game tomorrow night on Apple TV. Heidi, you mentioned the name there, Jose Altuve, and coming off this last weekend with the Baseball Hall of Fame, I'm just curious, from someone who follows the game from a national level, we're obviously entrenched with the Astros every single day and have our own certain opinions on them. But it feels like every few weeks there's a kind of a think piece coming out about Jose Altuve's Hall of Fame candidacy. Is he a guy that's going to be maybe held back a year or two from getting in because of what happened in 2017, or is he the lock first ballot Hall of Famer that we in Houston view him as? In your talks with other people in the national baseball media, where do you see the national opinion sitting on Jose Altuve in the Hall of Fame?
Well, I think one thing that's helping Jose Altuve is that the fans don't vote on the Hall of Fame, because I think writers can see that from the writers who have votes for the Hall of Fame can see that, to a man, if you have looked into the sign-stealing scandal, every single person on that team, coaches, support staff, have said Jose wanted no part of what happened and that he was not a participant in it. And you look at his numbers over the course of his career, and it wasn't just a one-year or two-year kind of thing that was essentially going on with that was going on with the team. His numbers, you look at his comparison through age 34 season with Craig Biggio, who's in the Hall of Fame, his numbers are better. I mean, he's just a guy that you can bank, you set your watch to him. He's just so automatic. He's so consistent. Got a couple more years, got a chance to reach 3,000 hits. I know that's a goal of his. It would be great to see. He's just one of those players that I think is going to be a no-brainer.
Heidi, I'm curious because of the fact that, you know, you travel so much. When you come to Houston, what are the vibes for you? I know we know New York is so hectic and everything like that. Are there certain spots that you have, like, earmarked that you've got to go to or you want to get to, or places and things that you want to do when you get to H-Town?
You know, the food's always really good here, but usually when I'm on the road, I'm all about work. Like, I get to my hotel room and I'm game prepping and I'm catching up on some sleep and do the game. I'm at the ballpark all day, but usually we get some good food. I know Biggio is maybe I'll hook that up tonight. I like all the big screens and the good food there. But yeah, I'm usually singularly focused on work, although work usually comes up with some really good barbecue for us to eat.
There you go.
For me, it's like hotel and ballpark. That's kind of my drive.
Got some good Tex-Mex in and around your region of where you're staying, so there's always that opportunity
as well. There's plenty of that around. And Heidi's...
you got a recommendation for me?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. We got Lupe Tortilla's great.
Irma's.
The original Nifa's is
great.
The
original Nifa's, all for Tex-Mex right down there.
Yeah, and Irma's and the original Nifa's are pretty close to the ballpark, so it would be a quick Uber drive, so... But let's stay on food for a second, because I noticed in preparing for this interview on your Twitter account, you put up a poll about whether or not tomatoes belonged on a hamburger. I didn't see where you fell in the debate, because I don't know where Joel sits on this. I am firmly on no tomatoes on my hamburger, my cheeseburger. Heidi, where do you fall, and what started this debate?
No tomatoes. It's not that I have a thing against tomatoes. It's just on a hamburger, they're kind of like squishy and I don't know, it's like a weird texture thing for me. And it started because I had a barbecue and I had some friends over, and one of my girlfriends was like, "Do you have tomatoes?" I was like, "Oh no, I didn't even think about it. My family doesn't eat tomatoes." Like, I had all the rest of the fixings, every sauce you could imagine. I had cheese, I had, you know, onions and pickles and lettuce and like everything else you could put on a burger. No tomatoes. And then a second person asked me, "Oh, you have tomatoes?" And they started giving me grief about not having tomatoes. I'm like, "Who puts tomatoes on a burger anyway?" So I'm putting it to Twitter, and I just never checked to see who won that poll. I should follow up on that.
If I want a salad, I'll ask for a side salad. I love my burgers enough that I don't need the lettuce and tomato included.
Unfortunately, Team Tomatoes won 53% to 47%, Heidi. Okay. So.
Well,
we're in the minority here, but I'm with you. I don't want tomatoes on my hamburger.
No need. No, thank you. Cheese, yes.
Look, Heidi, we appreciate your work and everything you guys are doing with Apple TV, because the angles, the cameras, everything is top notch.
The music playlist, so you see that?
Phenomenal.
You can get the walk-up music on Apple Music.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So if you guys have not already found out, it's on Apple TV Plus tomorrow night, and you can get that game and see Heidi as well as Wayne Randazzo on play-by-play, and the D-Train, Dontrell Willis, is going to be the lead analyst. It's Friday Night Baseball. You can get Apple TV Plus subscriptions and sign up for that. It's $9.99 a month. I think you get two free looks at the baseball games on Friday night, I believe. But you normally, like last time you said, you could post something on your Twitter account too, right?
I usually get sent a link Friday morning from Apple that I can post for a free 2-month trial. So I will post that tomorrow morning. Check out my X account at Heidi Watney. And we have our pregame show on site.
Ooh.
And Xavier Scruggs, who's fantastic, he's going to be talking to, I believe it's Jose Altuve during batting practice right around the cage. The whole thing is fan-friendly experience for the game, right? Visually and with player access. So we're going to bring you closer to the game than ever before. So tune in tomorrow. Half an hour early, though, for our pregame show. It's 6:30.
We love the coverage. We appreciate you joining us because I know you got a lot going on. But thanks for joining us, and have a good call tomorrow night.
All right. Thanks, guys.
There you go. Heidi Watney from Apple TV. Again, that's from what I've understood, this is the last appearance for the Astros on Apple TV until possibly September.
Probably.
So,
I'm glad Heidi's on the right side of history as far as tomatoes or no tomatoes on a hamburger.
Heidi is on the right side of tomatoes is what we're taking away from that. And the fact that she's on...
That's going to be the lead headline for the podcast.
Well, watch a pro here, Brian, because if you think she's on the right side of tomatoes, which is a fruit, you also know she's on the right side of Apple TV because she's doing Sideline Apple TV Plus. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with a whole lot more. Approaching the end of hour number two of the big program, but still plenty more to get to. We always like your participation. 713-780-3776. You can call or text that number. Maybe get in on some more of your possibilities for trade candidates for the Astros to focus on. Is it a batter, relief pitcher, starting pitcher, or otherwise? We'll kick all that around and a whole lot more coming up as we continue to roll on. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
You're back.
back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Back, short segment before we get to the top of the hour, but we do want to kick in some other things leading to what we were talking about with Heidi and Brian and I were talking about today, and that is with the trade deadline fast approaching. We both said, look, starting pitching is the top priority, but if they don't have enough assets in the cupboard to make the kind of moves that I think a lot of fans are hopeful for, when and if the situation arises after the deadline, do we start seeing some of these prospects and some of the top prospects in this organization that have been doing some big things in AAA to see if they might be able to be someone that could help out? We've heard the name Will Wagner, not just because it's Billy's kid, but because of the fact that at the start of the season, when we were looking at what might happen with Alex Bregman, he was a name that was being thrown out as a potential guy that could fill a void next season. But he's playing really well for Sugarland. Pedro Leon, a guy that we've heard maybe the Astros are shopping because they don't know if there's a clear path for him to get to the big leagues and help them, but he is ripping the cover off the ball for the Space Cowboys. And then Shea Whitcomb is another guy that I saw up close and personal that they said is a workaholic that has been bombing the baseball. He has pop. He has all the numbers. And he's a guy like Wagner that's played first and third that might be a guy that could come in and give you some quality ABs. I don't know about you, B-Mac, but look, at a certain point, if they aren't able to acquire a bat at the deadline, these are guys that I need to take a look at.
Yeah, and I think the biggest spot where I could see somebody getting a look is maybe at first base if they're not completely happy with Singleton. I know Singleton's had some up and downs. He was really hot to start the month of July, then had a rough stretch coming out of the All-Star break. We'll see how he continues to hit between now and the All-Star break, but I mean, that name you mentioned, I think, believe last, Shea Whitcomb mm-hmm. has just been unbelievable. And it's not, unlike Pedro Leon, who's kind of been a one-year wonder right now, because it feels like that was a name that we've talked about forever as Astros fans, as a prospect to watch, but his numbers up until this year really hadn't been that of a great prospect. But this year he's been great, but he's a 26-year-old in AAA, so you kind of raise your eyebrow at it. I mean, Shea Whitcomb's not a lot younger. He's only 25, but he's been far more consistent this year. He's 20 home runs already. Last year he hit 35 home runs between AA and AAA, drove in over 100 RBI, and had over 100 RBI. Shea Whitcomb is someone, whether it be maybe give a look this year to maybe platoon or split time with John Singleton at first base if they don't get the bat, and I don't think they do because they're going to spend their resources on starting pitcher and relief pitcher. Or he could be a name where if, you know, I know Heidi Watney wasn't crossing off the idea of Alex Bregman coming back, but if Alex Bregman leaves like we all kind of expect, Shea Whitcomb should be a name that you consider at third base next season.
Yeah, look, I think the other thing that's intriguing about all of this is there's a name that hasn't been mentioned with everything we've been talking about with a bat and where they would play, and that's Loperfido at first base. They still seem hell-bent.
I don't think they're doing it this year,
yeah,
though.
They still seem hell-bent on the fact that they're not going to do what we thought was inevitable for them to do once Abreu left, which was give Joey a chance. He's played it. He's played it well. There was the whole Twitter controversy about the play, defensive play that they posted with the Space Cowboys that suddenly was taken down.
Right,
he could play first base. He's played it in college. We had him on with us when we were broadcasting live when he was still with the Space Cowboys. And he's a great kid, but he talked about the fact that he has experience playing first.
He brings like six different gloves to the ballpark.
Yeah, then he comes back with the Space Cowboys and plays more first base and shows that he can play it. Bagwell was watching him down to see what he could do. Nothing says to me, especially because they both are left-handed hitters, that if John Singleton isn't the answer, why wouldn't you see Joey get a chance because they seem not kind of hell-bent to making sure he's in the lineup more frequently? Why wouldn't you at least give him some at-bats at first base, too, to see if he can do what you need a first baseman to do?
I'm absolutely with you, but I think the answer would be, one, we need to see more from him with his bat. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's be honest. I think the comparison that we tried to put on him when he first came up was like, would you take it if he was Joey Gallo? Would you take a low average if he could hit for a ton of power? Because that's kind of what he'd shown in the minor league level. Obviously, he hit for a better average than Joey Gallo in the minors, but he's facing minor league pitching. And he hasn't shown – I mean, his batting average has been far better than a Joey Gallo so far in the major leagues. But the power has not mm-hmm. been there. I mean, his slugging's not there. He only has two home runs so far. So regardless of where you play him, whether it's left, whether it's platooning in center when Jake needs a day off, whether it's in right until Kyle Tucker gets back, whether it's at first, none of that matters if he doesn't start to hit for more power, because if he doesn't start to hit for more power, he's not going to stay wherever he's at. But the other part of the answer, I think, what you would expect to hear is I think they view him as too athletic to place him at first base. They want him in the corner outfield because of his athleticism. I mean, John Singleton, especially when you look at the two body types between John Singleton and Joey Loperfido. Obviously, Loperfido is a far better athlete, and maybe that would have its advantages.
But isn't that more long-term? Because they're going to keep force-feeding to us Chaz McCormick, as much as it may be hard to take from time to time.
Isn't that part of the answer? Because Chaz has been so bad, they don't want to just stick Loperfido at first base because they want somebody to take some at-bats from Chaz.
But they're also hell-bent at playing Yordan a certain amount of games in left field, too. So
yeah, like once a week, though. It's not that often.
I just think that at a certain point, you've got to throw all of your long-term and hang-ups out the window and just look at the fact that from night to night, to put your best lineup out there, you're either going to do what Heidi Watney said, which she thinks, and I think that this is a legit chance too, you just stick with Singleton the rest of the year. But if he goes through those bad stretches again and he's not as the kind of player we thought that he wasn't capable of being, but he's had a little bit of a life spurt, to do some things that are better. If Joey plays first base, because Yiner's not going to. If Yordan's in left field, if Yiner's behind the plate or he's DHing, to get your best offensive lineup out there, I don't know why you wouldn't give Loperfido the opportunity to catch maybe a few other opportunities by playing first base.
Maybe it's they're not pleased with the sitting. I mean, that might be it. Like when he first came up, he hasn't hit for power the whole time, obviously. But when he first came up, the batting average was unreal. Those first few weeks to a month before he got sit down and then came back up, he was sitting over 300. Mm-hmm. But we've seen since then the batting average is slowly creeping down. And to make up for that, or to not make up for that, the home runs haven't come back. I mean, and again, he's only got two home runs. Yeah. So it might be that he hasn't earned the right to force himself onto the field as much as we'd like to see it. I mean, I'm all for giving him some playing time at first base to see if he can be a better defensive option than John Singleton. I think he could potentially hit better than John Singleton once he figures it out. But I think that right now the Astros are just, in a comfortable spot with John Singleton.
I don't think they can afford to be comfortable with John Singleton.
I'm not disagreeing with you, but if I had to handicap it and say, what are the Astros going to do at first base the rest of the season? It's John Singleton. I mean, other than days when he needs a day off, I don't think they're going to have enough assets to go replace him while also acquiring a starting pitcher and a relief pitcher. And they don't seem to be willing to put Yiner Diaz or Loperfido at first. So unless he needs a day off and maybe put Dubon there.
If you're facing a tough lefty, so what are you doing? You're going to just say Diaz is going to be the answer?
But if you're facing a tough lefty, the answer isn't Loperfido at
first. That's what I'm saying. So we've ruled out Joey. And we're saying if they're going to go with John, then is it going to be Dubon or is it going to be Diaz?
I think it's going to be Dubon.
Yeah, I don't. I just don't think Diaz can catch up to the pitches anymore.
No, yeah, no. I don't want it to be Diaz. No, I hopefully that experiment ends fairly quickly. I think it's going to be Singleton, and when he needs a day off, it's Dubon. I think that's what they're going to do. I don't like it, but I understand there are some limitations both in what they can do at the trade deadline and probably just with the overall comfortability of, look, Loperfido hasn't hit well enough to earn pushing John Singleton off a spot yet.
All right, we got to get to a break because we got to come back with Bad Take Boulevard. Everybody looks forward to it on a Thursday. We want to make sure we've got it for you. That's coming up next. The final hour of the program is on deck, and we will get to it in just a minute right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
ESPN 97.5.